What's up, everybody? Welcome to the SWAT MMA podcast. My name is Jared. I'm here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada. This is episode number 161, and today we're going to be talking all about UFC 285, Jones versus Gone. We're going to talk about BKFC 37. We're going to take a look ahead to next week's UFC card, seeing the return of Petr Yan. Before we get to the combat sports, though, you know what time it is. Grab your weed, fire it up. Let's get into the weed of the week. Smoke weed every day. What are we smoking on today, Paul?
Alrighty, so this week we are smoking on some Dole Whip. So this one's going to be a 60-40 sativa indica hybrid. It's going to be a mix of tropical truffles and cookies and cream.
Tropical truffles and cookies and cream. This has a very pleasant kind of citrusy, orangey taste.
Yeah, so this one's coming in at a 21.5 THC. Got some really, you know, interesting information here from this QR code that was on the weed.
I like this brand. This is made by a company called Road Tripper.
Yeah. It's pretty cool on the label they have. This one's from The Dispensary. You just click this little QR code on the packaging. It has, like, all the strain info, like, all their testing info of, like, you know, lab tested and all that.
Chemical testing,
all that shit. And, I think it's pretty cool.
I like this weed a lot. I prefer sativa, and I prefer a weed that tastes like this. Kind of orangish, citrusy, real smooth.
Yeah.
Makes sense with the genetics. Another thing I like about this brand is that it's one of the least expensive brands in Vegas that you can buy at particular dispensaries. And that doesn't mean, in this case, low quality. I've actually tried several of their strains. I've only had one that was a little bit questionable on the cure, giving it that slightly hay taste. Sometimes it happens. But seriously, out of like 10 purchases, one bag being maybe iffy is not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, here in fucking Vegas, that's a problem.
Yeah. I like, usually I get that brand because at the dispensary, they always have different, like, kind of deals and shit. One time I got a half with four different quarters of two goddamn an ounce. I'm an idiot. Four different quarters of this strange weed.
I was waiting for that to click.
Wait a second, four quarters. So I've tried a lot of different of those strains, and they just do things right away for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. We got some of that uppercut from Tyson left over from last week as well, plus a couple of vape pens with. I got something from Trendy I bought. I can't remember what it is now anymore. Candy cane, something or the other.
Yeah, just to add into that this cantaloupe one I had from last week, too.
That's nice. So we got plenty of things to smoke on.
Yes, sir.
Binoid CBD is sponsoring the Weed of the Week this week. You can get the best deals on CBD products as well as Delta 9 THC products and more. Most of them legal in all 50 states. Just go to our website, SWATMMA.com. Click on the Cool Stuff button. You'll know where to go from there.
Speaking of smoked, let's talk about UFC 285. So last night we had John Jones take on Ciryl Gane in a really pivotal fight in the career and legacy of John Jones. And he just came out and fucking did what he always does. Dominated, made it look easy, and just more and more and more cements his legacy as the unquestionable greatest MMA fighter who's ever lived.
You know, I think the expression I used last week when we were discussing this fight is I said that John Jones is going to come out and just steamroll him.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. In fact, we believe so strongly that we went down to the sports book and bet on it, which we don't always do. You know, we always like to make picks, but doesn't mean we're always throwing money at him.
Yeah.
But it was a nice come up for both of us on that. And I don't even know why that
was by submission.
I don't know why that was not.
Yeah, the prop.
I don't know the odds on that, though.
The prop was plus 365.
And it was plus 550 at one point.
Yeah.
Probably
just people kept throwing.
I mean, how else did you think he was going to win?
Yeah.
But whatever. People believed in what. When I used to mispronounce his name, I called it the Gane train. It doesn't work so well with the Gane train. But I've never been a believer. I didn't think this dude was this revolutionary figure. I don't get it. I didn't get it before. I didn't get it when they're giving him an interim title shot. I didn't believe any of the hype a year ago.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Yeah.
He made short work of that fool. That guy didn't know what to do. He couldn't even stay off the cage.
Yeah.
Like, John Jones took the center of the octagon immediately, started backing him up immediately. And that's after taking a nut shot. I mean, the guy comes out and kicks him in the nuts. Gon kicks Jones in the nuts at like the 7-second mark.
Yeah.
I mean, a pretty solid blow. Mm-hmm. That was his best blow of the fight, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Jones could have taken, I would have taken longer to recover, but whatever.
Jones said he didn't feel it. He just wanted the referee to know what happened.
Did he? Okay, I missed that part, but good.
Yeah, he was. He said that he had seen Gon do similar things in past fights where he had gotten away with it because people would just shrug it off and try to, you know, keep the momentum of the fight going. And he was like, "I was not allowing that to happen." He kicked me low. I showed the referee what was going on, then kept going. Makes
good
sense
for him.
Yeah,
but he controlled the center. He pushed him up against the cage. He took him down. Got back up. Took him down again. And he winds up choking him out in this weird sitting position where I think the commentators were saying that's not tight as soon as he started tapping.
Yeah.
You know, it looked awkward.
It was because, like, he, like, had his upper body on the cage, but then he kind of cranked his head. It was
reminded me a little bit of the way he choked out Machida. I mean, it was different, but it was just reminiscent to me of it.
Mm-hmm. Very similar. It was a quick tap by Gon, too.
He didn't want none of that fucking smoke, man. Yeah. Now everybody's like, oh, yeah, well, what do you expect? Jones is the greatest. Yeah, all you motherfuckers were talking mad shit beforehand. Yeah. Like, the internet was filled with people talking. Like go on, like, some of these websites and go back and look at their picks and look how many people were picking fucking Cyril to win this fight.
Yeah.
And we kept hearing about Dominic Reyes and Anthony Smith and Thiago Santos.
Yeah.
And some of that criticism was valid, but it was never backed up with the balancing point of John Jones was bored at this point of what he was doing.
Yeah.
John Jones is no longer bored. He took 3 years. Mm-hmm. He did it the right way. That's a big bulk up. Mm-hmm. Then there were some idiots talking about how he looked fat this week, which I thought was absurd. Do you think he's going to come out looking like a bodybuilder? It's not a bodybuilding competition.
Well, and the whole thing was he's never been that. Like, he's never been, like, this huge... bulky, like, beach muscle guy.
No,
ever.
No.
Even when he was at light heavyweight, that was always a joke that people would say, which also ended up being a big reason was he wasn't training. But this time, it was his training. He just has a different body style now.
Dude, he's very big. I don't know what people were saying. Yeah, he's very strong. Large. He's not fat at all. That dude, that's bulk, son.
Yeah.
And he looked very fast. He looked very capable.
Yeah.
For supposedly being, what was his coach calling him, Lopez, the other day, Gon? He was calling him, like, having revolutionized the heavyweight division. Well,
revolutionized striking in the heavyweight
division. He got his ass revolutionized by fucking John Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just, in the words of the eternal great Nate Diaz, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Yeah, not at all.
I only wish I could have bet more.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I really wish I was reckless at
this
point. Yeah,
me too, because it was so obvious that he was going to sub him, too. It was just, like, a matter of time.
I didn't think it would be that quick.
I
didn't think it was going to be the first round. Shit. I did say he was going to steamroll him, but I didn't expect it to be, like...
A zero, like, out, like...
The shit barely started, and it was over.
Yeah. It was over quickly. Made short work.
It's embarrassing. Just embarrassing. I hope that whole team is embarrassed.
It should be.
I talked all that shit. He was, even in the press conference, he really wasn't even that humble, Cyril wasn't, because he was sitting there saying ridiculous shit to me, like, well, this is my first real true loss. No, you got decision by Ngannou with two blown out knees, son.
Even Dana said some shit like that, dude. Dana said that if he never would have, like, let Francis, like, take his back or some bullshit like that, I can't remember, that, he said if Cyril Gon never went for a heel hook versus Francis, he wins that fight. I was like, what
are
the
you
fuck?
Smoking crack?
Yeah, that's literally what he said. He goes, you know, like, this fight was like an actual, beatdown for Gon. That's what Dana said. So both of them kind of ran with the same narrative. Like, they were like, oh, this is the first time Gon, like, really got beat. You really look at the Francis fight, like, so I think they're part of the people feeding him that narrative, too. It's not just his team. It's the UFC, too. Because if Dana White's saying that shit, like, what the fuck, dude?
This is another way to shit on Francis.
It is, yeah. And then all of this is. Because if you look at the end of the fight, when Dana White says he was scared, he is this, he was that, and then John, and after press conference, says, you got all that muscle, but you're still a pussy. That was pretty funny. Yeah. But I do think, like, it's just all a big, like, let's move on narrative for the UFC. And for all the right reasons, because I do think in a scenario where that's Francis Ngannou last night, I don't think it ends very differently. I think John subs Francis too. I just don't see anybody at heavyweight that John's really going to give the time of day to want to put any kind of work in on the feet with them. Because it's not that he's scared or that he's going to.
No, it's just that at heavyweight, anybody can knock anybody out, and he doesn't need to fucking. Why take that risk?
Yeah.
I mean, he stood with Gon for a little while. But why would you not? Dude, he just manhandled him. He sunned him.
Yeah. And that's the same thing he could do with all these other heavyweights.
Sure, why not? Like, I mean, his toughest test will be Stipe, and he'll win that fight. And that's coming from. I'm a big fan of Stipe Miocic. Yeah. I love that dude.
Yeah.
You know, Stipe's been bulking up. There should be a different Stipe when it comes to that fight. He's been bulked up for Francis because he felt that the size really played a difference in that last fight.
Yeah.
And he's been, you know, putting in solid work, too. He says he's actually heavier than Jones now. So I imagine he's 250, 255. I don't think he's much bigger.
Yeah.
But in his interviews last night, Stipe's, you could tell he was large.
Yeah. I don't know.
Jones's response to that is, you know, it's not a bodybuilding contest. Once again, he's right. I don't expect it to go like zero.
No.
It'll be a real fight.
Yeah.
But I expect John to be victorious, most likely by a decision, possibly a later round submission, maybe.
I hate to play MMA Matthew, but
it's hard to do.
It's hard not to, because like when you look at prior opponents, I like to really point to Daniel Cormier kind of being both Stipe and Jones' best opponent. And they're just two very different levels of, like, how they handled it. Like, John Jones never gives his opponents the respect or time of day to ever get any kind of offense going, to ever get any kind of momentum going whatsoever. John is,
for the most part,
yeah, go in there and shut everything down you got going on. But I feel like sometimes Stipe in his last couple of fights and his career overall is he has these lulls in fights where he goes in and like when he has his moments, they're great. But then like he'll have these little lulls where you see some of his opponents have like success and then you're like, whoa, but then he shuts it down after that. And I think if you give John Jones any kind of opportunity like that, he's just going to do too much with it and you're going to lose the fight.
I think Stipe has the athleticism to hang with Jones for a while, and I think he has the fight IQ to do it as well. But they're not equally comparable, the John Jones, Cormier, and Stipe, because they did take place at much different weights.
Yeah.
And that does play a factor.
Because
DC cutting weight down to 205 is not the same as DC at 236. It's just not.
I guess he carried more knockout power, I would say.
He does, and he fights a little bit different, too, you know. Yeah. But there is a lot of comparisons, clearly, to be made there, although MMA math is pretty tricky.
Yeah.
I think that Stipe will take this fight very seriously. Not that he didn't take the others, but, I mean, he's fighting Ngannou. He has to worry about one particular thing that Ngannou does, and he got caught with the thing that Ngannou does.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck.
Yeah.
It's not, to me, it's not the end of the world. And it's just, that's what Ngannou does to people. And it's the heavyweight. So it's not like he was a lightweight and he got decimated by some guy. Like, holy fuck. As we see heavyweights kind of get knocked out, it doesn't necessarily mean he's chinned.
Yeah, no.
You know what I mean? I think his chin is still solid. People talk about his age. They're like, oh, he's 40. And Jones is 37. You were talking 36 months. And I don't really see that. The inactivity shouldn't matter because, okay, so Jones will have had this 2-minute fight where he fucking sunned up fucking gone. He's not shaking off the ring rust with that, so to speak.
Uh-uh.
So I don't really think that balances out between the two of them. The size should be about equal.
I think John's a little longer.
But I don't think that all things being equal on these men that Stipe on his best day beats Jones on Jones's best day. I just don't. I love him, but I don't think Jones is the best, dude.
Yeah.
We've never seen anything that would point to Jones being in trouble, really. No one's beat him.
Yeah.
No one's fucking whooped that ass. He hasn't done an Anderson Silva, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had that first fight against Gustafsson where he was down and then he came back. But it wasn't like Chael Anderson where he won in the last 1 minute of a fight he lost 4.5 rounds of.
Yeah.
He didn't have this shit. He's never really been in any trouble. People want to point to Dominic Reyes. It was still a unanimous decision win, so say what you will.
Mm-hmm.
They point to Thiago Santos, the split. Isn't that all in the past now? I mean, look what he's doing here. That was sublime.
Yeah, and I think people put a little too much faith in the idea of John was not doing shit in his time off. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of people were like when they were talking about him taking 3 years off, they were making it sound like he was like 3 years off and he was just kicking it. Like, nah, this fool took 3 years off and trained his fucking ass off every day of those 3 years.
Absolutely.
And got ready to do what he wanted to do.
He got
last
up to 267 with muscle mass.
Yeah.
And he felt way too fucking big, he said.
Real quickly, though, I do want to just a small rebuttal to what you were talking about with Stipe.
No.
I feel like in Stipe's like big fights, he's had those things that he had to have in his head. Like, he knew Daniel Cormier had elite wrestling, and he knew Daniel had like a pretty solid power coming his way. Francis, he knew it was otherworldly power that could erase him. With John, he has all of that. John could do any of that shit. John can finish him on the feet. I think John could finish him on the ground. I think, like, that's, like, the only difference, I think, with John Jones and everybody else in the UFC. If you look at John Jones' career as a whole, he has finished and he has dominated in every single facet of the game.
Yeah.
And there's not a single one that you can look back and point to and be like, eh, but he's kind of okay at this, and he's kind of okay at, like, no. Every single facet of John Jones' game is elite. And I just don't think that there's anybody else you can really compare. Like, on the Stipe side of things, like, it's not his fault that he's there. John Jones is an otherworldly talent. There's no other way of putting it.
He's the one.
Yeah, he's the one. Like, there's just certain guys that it's just not fair. It's everybody else out there is just not fair for them. And that's just what he's going to run into with John.
It shouldn't even be a question that he regains his spot at the top of the pound for pound.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
It shouldn't even be a question that he's the greatest mixed martial artist of all time at this point. If that didn't fucking seal it.
Yeah.
And I don't like to even say that when people are still active. But, I mean, look at his resume.
There's no other resume you can really compare it to. Because, like, even if you want to, like, let's just play a little game just for fun right now. You know, even if you want to be like Demetrius Johnson or Khabib. Demetrius Johnson and Khabib are in GSP as well. But those three are probably the closest, like, you could ever compare to. But I think all three of those resumes has flaws that John's don't.
Yeah.
You know, I think when you look at Khabib didn't defend the title long enough. He didn't have enough UFC wins when you compare
and
to
his
John.
Resume doesn't compare. His resume doesn't begin compare. To compare. He's got some top-level talent at the end when he fought, you know.
Those last three.
The last three.
Yeah.
But that wasn't near. It pales in comparison to Jones's record light heavyweight defenses.
Defenses.
And now
even
the move
title
to the
fights.
Heavyweight division and winning that title on top of it.
And then when you look at DJ, like, DJ on his way out, he ends up losing. He's had those early losses in his career where he was just coming along and, like, he really turned into the flyweight goat in front of our eyes.
Yeah.
Whereas John has always been the goat since he stepped
into
the fucking
octagon. Since
he stepped
into there, he was shocking.
You know what I mean?
With
his
amazing skill set.
The only person you could ever really honestly have a solid argument about is, I would say, GSP and Jones. Just because GSP is damn near as flawless as Jones.
GSP did move up a weight class, but then there's this weird massive little asterisk because of who we fought. I'm not trying to throw shade at Bisping, but it's just
them think so.
I don't think it's as big a deal as I hear it's made. But I mean, yeah, you can go online and read some forums. Just some people are definitely on that tip. Like, yeah, like Bisping had no business actually being the champ. He got lucky against Rockhold, and he beat fucking Dan Henderson, and then, you know, GSP cleaned him up with his diverticulitis or whatever the fuck he had going on. I don't know. I like Bisping. I'm not of that mindset, but it's there. It's an argument that can be made. And yeah, we've got the loss to Matt Serra, and we've got, you know, Johnny Hendricks. Yeah. He did win that fight, but that's kind of similar. I guess you could maybe talk a little bit about Dominic Reyes fight, the people in Jones being comparable to the Johnny Hendricks fight in a way. I don't really know. Yeah. But I mean, Hendricks fell apart after that too. But
yeah, so did Reyes.
I would still say that John Jones's resume outweighs GSP's resume when you look at this list of names and where they were when he fought them.
Yeah,
he's fought everybody from the former champs,
future champs,
the up and comers. Yeah. The older champs, the guys from other divisions that were supposed to be the shit, like Belfort, Sonnen.
Guys who end up, like, kind of showing out of the UFC and becoming champs in other major organizations. You got, like Bader and Brandon Vera. And, you know, you even have, like, the quote-unquote golden age of light heavyweight names also. You know, you got the, you know, the Rampage Jacksons, the Lyoto Machidas, Rashad Evans.
Like, taking out Matashenko. He's even beat Ryan Bader, the current heavyweight champ over in Bellator.
I mean,
of course, Daniel Cormier.
Glover. Daniel Gustafsson. Cormier twice.
He had his fight against Gustafsson, the first one, where people tried to say he lost that. He came back and whooped his ass.
Yeah.
I just...
Like, who can you really point to that's missing other than Stipe?
Nobody. He could retire after Stipe, and it would be the consensus he's the best.
Yeah.
But I personally think he's not only going to want to beat Stipe, I think he'll want to beat Stipe's record, too. It's only three defenses. If he can get either tie it or beat it, because he could tie it, and having a win over Stipe would definitely, there you go.
I would think he'd want to break it, though.
But yeah, I feel that John Jones is highly motivated again. I feel like he's going to want to hang around for a minute. Dana White was trying to hint that he was going to retire after the Stipe shit. I think he's just trying to already build the pay-per-view sales for Stipe.
Well,
I don't see that happening.
Here's the thing, too, is I think John Jones is a true historian of like sports, too. I think legacy is a real big thing to him. Like, to have not only the light heavyweight defense
record,
but then also having the heavyweight and had held both titles, ending his career virtually undefeated in the UFC. That's, I think all that aligning is really big to him. Like, and that's what he wants to leave as his stamp on the sport, you know?
Right, and let's talk about Daniel Cormier with that for a minute. I mean, look, it's probably never going to happen, but there is somewhat of a valid argument when people talk about, oh, he's a steroid cheat. And they like to point to the Daniel Cormier, the second fight on July 25th of 2017, where he got the knockout in the third round. And then they, and this B sample, I believe it was, they find a metabolite of, it was Turnable.
Yeah.
And it was 14 picograms.
Yeah.
And that was in 2017. And then in late 2019, USADA changes the threshold for that testing to 100.
Yeah.
Picograms. If you test for 100 or lower, it is not flagged. It doesn't come out, and it's because those tests were too sensitive.
Yeah,
and you could literally pick that type of shit up anywhere. Like, you could get that shit, and this wasn't from tainted meat, but I'm just saying you could get that shit from tainted meat. I mean,
yeah,
that's a valid argument. There, people are like, they want to be like, "Oh, he's a steroid." Did you know how little fucking shit that is? So, anyways, I'm just saying all the little asterisks that he might have in the steroid cheat thing is one of them. I mean, his other one was for the Anderson Silva one, where he tested positive for, it wasn't steroids, but it was some hormones that he said came from a dick pill.
Yeah, it was like hormone blockers.
And that one, I believe, also went to an arbitrator where it found that he wasn't trying to cheat willfully, although they still gave him a suspension of it.
Yeah.
All right, and then that's the other one was for John cocaine, Jones, and he was like, "Yeah, I like to party." You what?
So John Jones is also undefeated in court.
Yeah, true. And I don't even want to talk about things that happen that don't affect the cage. Because that doesn't
no, no,
really
no
matter.
I just mean on the USADA side of things.
These are the things that would people would say in defense of him not being the greatest. Oh, well, he's a drug cheat or a steroid cheat. Is he, though? No. I mean, yes, he has a failed test, but retroactively, it's not even close to... It wasn't even like he was at the... He had 99. He had 14 fucking picograms. Most people don't even know what the fuck that is.
Yeah.
From what I understand, it's the equivalent of if you took 14 grains of salt and you tossed them into an Olympic-sized swimming pool, that's how much shit was in his system.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's 100% fact, but that's the way it was explained to me. Now, think about that for a minute. Mm-hmm. You can't see 14 grains of salt barely in your hand. I'm not convinced that means he was doping up.
I'm not either. So, and really, I think the biggest thing when you talk about John Jones is his effect on the sport as a whole. I think that he has been kind of the one who, although like McGregor and all those guys took the sport in pay-per-views and took it on a whole nother level. But before then, Jones carried this whole fucking thing on his back for a good solid chunk of his early career. And that's a lot of pressure on a young guy.
Yeah.
And people always kind of made fun of like him for being like, oh, he's two-faced or, you know, he's a fake like personality. But I think now he's so much more likable because he is not only, you know, the greatest of all time, but he's relatable. Not everyone's a fucking the greatest at everything in life. You know,
I don't think he was ever two-faced, man. Like
that was always the narrative.
No, I know. I'm agreeing with that. I'm not saying you're saying he is, but I know that narrative. And they're saying it basically because he's got a Bible verse tattooed on his chest. His dad was a preacher. And when he stopped a robbery, you know, before that one pay-per-view, like, and he came out and he talks about Jesus after he wins, and he was trying to be a good role model. And then he does a bunch of shit in his personal life that shows that he's really not that great of a role model in his personal life. But here's my point. Is he supposed to be a role model in his personal life?
No.
Is he two-faced because he wanted to put a good face to the public, to the kids, or whoever they want to say is looking up to him?
Yeah.
Because that's why people want to shit on him, say he's bad, because of the kids. So, okay. So he wanted to put the best face forward. Is that being two-faced, or is that what literally everybody does?
100%. I agree.
Like?
I agree.
Just because you may not like it, because what he wanted to put forth had to tie in with religion, and oh my God, he's not perfect. So, oh look, how can he be talking about religion when he's drinking and running over pregnant ladies, and he does cocaine, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know how many fucking people do cocaine, bro?
Yeah.
Do you know how many thousands of people did cocaine this weekend and here with Vegas? I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Thousands in this one little city this weekend, bro.
Yeah.
Successful people who were at that fight.
Yeah.
Who have more money than most people listening to this fucking podcast. Again, I'm not condoning. I'm just saying this. So what? He's the scum of the earth.
Yeah.
Because he was a rich dude who did some blow. I mean, fuck's sake, man. Wake up.
Yeah. Well, and also I think it also kind of is kind of something Joe Rogan had said leading up to this fight is like people want John to be perfect, but the biggest part about John that made him so great was how imperfect he was. You know, the fact that he is the guy who doesn't train and fucking still comes out and beats Gustafson. He's still the guy who, you know, virtually was saying people were saying didn't train his whole young career and fucking
he used to get fat
all these guys
camps, like, dude. Yeah
he was
eating ice cream and doing a miniature version of fucking Patty the Batty shtick,
yeah,
you know, but for real. But he got on focus, dude. He's clearly not been doing that now. I'm not saying he hasn't partied a little bit, but dude, look at him. That's real weight. That's like that's how you grow into a real heavy. That's not gym muscles. He's not going to quit working out and shrink back down to 205 in 6 weeks. Like good on him. He's the GOAT. I think we've about beat it to death here at this point, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about a little bit of the rest of the card real quick.
Yeah, real quick.
Alexa Grasso, probably one of the biggest upsets. Definitely the biggest upset at 125 pounds.
In a fight she was losing, she capitalized on a Shevchenko mistake. Mm-hmm. Shevchenko went for a very ill-advised spinning back kick.
Yep.
I didn't like it when she was doing it in the early rounds. This was in the fourth. And man, Grosso just seized right on her back, right when she was missed with the kick, left her back exposed, and basically that was it. That was a nasty choke.
The squeeze was nasty. They showed the photo after. Freaking Valentina had, like, you know, like, when you put, like, a rubber band on your hand, yeah. And then, like, one part of your hand's all, like, white because it's, like, the circulation's gone. That was fucking Valentina's face had a whole, like, white mark across her chin. It was, like, so that really wasn't even under her neck, but the squeeze that fucking Grosso was putting on her just shut it all off.
That was in the fourth round, and kudos to Grosso. It was a great win. I don't know. There's probably going to be a rematch.
Yeah, there has to be.
I don't really know how that one goes.
I don't either, because
it really depends on Shevchenko, I think, because she was winning that fight. It was a close fight, but I had her winning all the rounds.
But so, she's another, the first. She's another Grosso one.
Might have got the first
that I have to question her motivation now, because where do you go from here? Because there's two different ways. She either has now, which I don't think we've seen necessarily in the octagon, but a steady, maybe diminish in interest in opponents.
Yeah.
Like, she's constantly calling for this Amanda fight every single time she fights. She was talking about before the fight, and I do think she generally overlooked Alexa Grosso and thought that this was a lower-level opponent that, if I did some higher level shit that maybe she didn't see coming, then I'd get her out of here. And I think Grosso did what anyone who's an underdog in a fight should do. She sat back, didn't do anything stupid that was going to lose her the fight, and she let Shevchenko make the mistakes. And she just capitalized when the mistakes were made. And that's what any of these like guys who are pulling off, or women obviously, that are pulling off these big upset fights, you're seeing just the patience and the willpower by these fighters to wait for their moment and wait. It's kind of like what we saw when Leon Edwards, who got beat down by Usman for 4.5 rounds, but he just waited, and as soon as that fucking window opened, he capitalized. And I think that's very similar to what Alexa Grosso did last night. She sat back, she stayed in the fight. She never let it get too far gone where mentally she would be out of it. And then as soon as she saw her moment, she took her chance. And now she's the flyweight champion of the world.
Yeah, great job by her. What about Shavkat Rakhmonov?
That was beating
the hell out of Jeff Neal.
Dude, he also took some shots from Neal.
He did. He showed he's got a chin.
Yeah, he proved a lot last night. That was ends up getting fight of the night. Jeff Neal missed weight by 5 pounds too.
Yeah,
coming in, so and that's
significant.
Absolutely. So
amount.
You know he's coming in a bit fresher than Shavkat also because he doesn't have to cut that extra five. And
this guy is 17-0 with 17 finishes.
Fucking crazy, bro. Nobody's finished Jeff Neal until last night either. Mm-hmm. First time.
He was mollywopping him, man.
Dude, it was crazy.
And he was taking, like you said, he was taking shots, too. He winds up outstriking him on significant strikes, 113-69.
Yeah.
And then he gets the sub, a rear naked choke, at the 417 mark of round three, proving he is the real deal. Yeah. There are some contenders coming up here.
I think him and Colby makes a lot of sense.
Ooh, man, yeah. Colby can't fight right now, though, so I don't think we're going to see that for a minute.
That's not what I heard last night. Dana said that now Colby said that he's been cleared to compete and he's ready for a fight as soon as possible.
Then there must be some resolution with that trial because Colby was claiming some sort of damage to his brain.
Yeah, and he couldn't fight because of it.
And you certainly can't go take an MMA fight while you're saying that.
Yeah. So it must have been some kind of like settlement or resolution within that whole thing because, yeah, Dana White said last night that he wants to make that Shavkat and Colby fight. I think that's the fight to make it this week, Wes. I think both those guys.
Well, you know,
I think,
if Dana says something, it's 100% truth.
Yeah, that too.
You know,
fuck it. I'll take Shavkat. Give me Shavkat and fucking your boy. Fucking.
That's not my boy.
That's your boy, dog.
Nah, but I know you're talking about him and Chimaev.
Him and Chimaev makes a lot of sense.
I can see that, but I don't know if Chimaev gets down to 170 again after blowing that Diaz fight.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But he proved he's the real deal, man. He proved he's the real deal.
Yeah.
You know who else proved he's the real deal all the way? I didn't know it was Bo Nickel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bo Nickel coming in and smoking Jamie Pickett. 254 round one with the arm triangle.
Yeah, I kind of saw that coming.
Yeah.
Should have put money on that, too.
Yeah. But
I mean, but this is kind of what he needs to do. Like, the UFC, for one time in the history of the organization, is putting on, like, an actual progression of opponents. Right? You know, in the Contender Series, I mean, me and you all always thought after the first fight that they could have signed him. But the second fight, you know, they bring in a little bit more seasoned guy and see how he handles it and does the same shit. This time, you bring in a guy who is a veteran of 22 fights in his MMA career, and he just does the same shit he did to the guys who were 6-0 and 7-0.
Yeah, he just steamrolled him. There's some minor controversy about a possible shot to the balls that Pickett might have taken before he got down. And I'll say two things to that. Let's say it did happen. I don't think that that means that he would have won the fight otherwise. I mean, the same result would have been, you know, inevitable, I think. And number two, call me naive, but I really think Bo Nickel was telling the truth afterwards in a press conference when he said he didn't do it.
Yeah.
Because you can feel it when you knee somebody, you can feel you hit the fucking cup, dude. It's pretty clear that what that is. And he was like, dude, if I hit him in the balls, I'll say I hit him in the balls. But yeah. I didn't. I don't know. Call me naive, but the guy doesn't seem to be a liar. I don't see what he would have to lose by letting the ref know, yeah, dude, I just fucking need him on accident. He knows he's going to smoke that dude anyways. He doesn't need... I mean, that implies, like, he has to do that to win.
And then I also...
And I just don't see that.
And not only that, I also think it's not Bo Nickel's responsibility to make sure the rules of the octagon are being
upheld. No, it's not. Like, I mean, if he did do it, it was inadvertent. Maybe he did it and he doesn't realize it. That's the third scenario. Then it was inadvertent.
Yeah.
And it's not his job to stop the fight. Be like, time out!
Yeah.
You can't. Right. He's going to get knocked out.
Help him out. I kicked him in the balls.
So, like, I mean, it's just something for the haters to throw some shade at Bo Nickel. But well, I thought he looked outstanding.
Yeah, I don't think it would give him 5 minutes rest. He still does the same thing 5 minutes later, I think.
Exactly.
Another great fight we had was Drakus Duplessis versus Derek Brunson. A real test, I thought, for Duplessis. I think
he's coming off that big win over Darren Till. But, you know, there's question marks around Darren Till going into that fight, which were possibly answered. I mean, he's not even in the UFC anymore. But Derek Brunson, everybody knows what's up with that.
Yeah.
And Brunson looked strong in that first round. He's a solid gatekeeper. I was thinking maybe Duplessis wasn't ready.
Yeah.
But then he comes out in round two and really, really laid some punches on him.
To the point where Derek's corner threw in the towel.
And let's talk about that for a second. I mean, Derek was getting fucked up.
Yeah, it was bad.
And really kudos to Derek Brunson's team for fucking recognizing that. We don't see enough of that in mixed martial arts. It is what should be done. It's their job to protect the fighter. You shouldn't be getting excess damage like that. There's no need to go out in the further rounds and just continue. He's not going to recover in 30 seconds sitting on a stool with a couple guys yelling in his face and a sip of water.
No.
Dude is lit.
Not only that, also do you think that when you're a guy like Derek Brunson and you are where you are in your career, what does another round of brain damage do for you?
Nothing. It fucks you up.
Yeah. It just shortens your career.
I thought that was spectacular. We see it in boxing. It's not a bad thing. There's no shame here. It's not a pussy.
It's not. Yeah, it's not that. And you know what it is? It is more than anything, it is a move that is going to lengthen your career and save your brain. You know what I mean? Like, there's just no necessity to the extra strikes that would happen inside the next, 5 minutes of that fight. Because Duplessis had him completely compromised. There was no comeback. Like, that's the thing. Everyone always likes to kind of, go back and forth with the whole throw in the towel argument because they think of, well, what, this is MMA. What happens if he lands some crazy punch or kick and he puts Duplessis out in the third round? Yeah, but what happens also if Duplessis then decides to just beat his face in for another round, and then Derek Brunson loses years off of his life.
Dude, all these people that say that shit
because of that kind of shit.
All these people that say that's they don't get it because it's not their head in there that's getting pummeled. So maybe in something they could understand, it's the equivalent of going into a casino with the deed to your house and walking up to a roulette table and going, I'll put it on this black,
yeah,
and it's probably not even that good of odds,
yeah,
I mean, I'm just saying, no serious consequences to take a blow to the head like that.
Yeah.
And it's iffy. It's maybe he's going to get some lucky shot and win.
Yeah.
Come on, man. It was good on them. Good for them. And Duplessis is going to get something being going on here. I mean, I don't see him beating the top of this division, but it'll be a good fight.
Yeah. What about your boy, Cody Garbrandt?
He fought an intelligent fight for once.
Yeah. He didn't get any crazy chinny wars.
He gets the win against big old Jalen Turner.
No, not Jalen Turner.
Or not? No, he didn't fight Jalen Turner. What am I thinking? That was Gamrot.
Yeah.
It was fill-in. It was Trevin Jones.
Trevin Jones, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Had a brain fart there. But yeah.
Kind of a low-action fight, but Garbrandt fought very smart.
He fought smart, and he fought, I think, with poise for once in his career. You know, he's always been drawn into these crazy firefights, and I think he just stuck to the game plan and, you know, was able to, you know, get a pretty solid route here.
It was a must-win for that fool.
Oh, yeah. I almost think he can walk away with this win.
I almost wish he would. I don't think this win, I don't think he's back. I don't think he's going to win a title. I don't really know if he should keep fighting. I'm not really on board with Cody anymore.
Yeah.
But he showed that he can still fight an intelligent fight at a UFC level and win. Mm-hmm. So there's that. So, well, I hope he hears this. He's really going to be loving that.
So another big fight. I thought Ian Garry passed a real big test.
That was a hell of a comeback for Ian Garry.
Yeah, he ends up getting put on the canvas real quick, and then he gets up and just puts on a striking clinic like he always does. I mean, he ends up outstriking his opponent 127-55.
Yeah, significant strikes.
Yeah. Leading to him winning by TKO.
And he does the McGregor strut afterwards, gets the nod from Conor. It was cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was cool. Overall, it was a good card, man. Yeah. It's kind of cool with the weigh-ins. They had Jake Gyllenhaal there with Connor filming shit for Roadhouse, which is interesting to me. This must be a completely different Roadhouse where a UFC fight is factoring into it somehow.
Yeah, somehow.
Because I'm actually a big fan of the original Roadhouse, and there's no professional fighting in there.
Yeah, I'd imagine this is a more like one of those reboots, like, rather than
it's got to be like he cleans up the Roadhouse and then they're like, you should come fight in the UFC, right? I mean, what else could
or
it be?
Like he was the champion and then he like gets,
then he goes,
gets stripped or something happens, something in his life, and then he goes back to his hometown where his Roadhouse is at.
Yeah, some shit like that. It's, yeah,
it's got to be something along those lines.
But that was kind of cool. They even filmed
a fake scenes. Fight.
You know that dude that he's with, Jay Heron?
Yeah.
That he filmed that scene with, back when I was waiting tables at P.F. Chang's when I very first moved to Vegas, I waited on that dude.
Oh, word.
Yeah, and I knew who he was. He's not one of the most well-known MMA fighters, but like,
he's pretty known, I'd say.
I was like, I know Jay Heron. Yeah.
That's cool.
I wasn't sure if it was him until like the ass end of it, because he didn't say nothing about it. And then he gave me his credit card. I was like, oh, fuck. Okay. And then we talked for a minute.
I waited on Big Country Roy Nelson up there during COVID.
Did he get his eat on?
Dude, he got down. Yeah. He was there with his family. Cool. It was right before he fought in Bellator.
That's the dude we don't hear nothing from no more.
Yeah, he
doesn't even show up on social media, does he?
I don't think so.
All right. He fell off the earth. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
They say Mullets are coming back in. Maybe he'll see you over
there. He's back.
But anyways, it was a good card overall, man.
Yeah.
It was a winner. And seeing, you know, circling back to the top of the card, seeing Jones really throw his dominance and cement his legacy no matter what at this point. That was pretty epic.
Yeah.
Let's touch on BKFC for a moment. You know, friend of the show, Connor Tierney, had his big London show, and that's some controversy there, and he walks away with the L at the last minute in a fight that, as far as we can tell at this point,
I thought
he was up 4-0 in the rounds going into the fifth.
Yeah.
He takes some shots. They stop it. The ref comes over, talks to him for a second, and he looks like he's good to go. He's like, yeah, I mean, he's breathing heavy.
Yeah.
It's fifth his round of the fight.
Though, and he's walking his hands are forward. Up.
He looks perfectly coherent. He's talking normal. I don't see any issue. And the ref suddenly just waves it off.
Waves it off, yeah.
And it's a sudden TKO victory for Jake Lindsay. And Connor immediately walks over to the fucking, you know, the side of the ring, throws his mouthpiece out, starts talking to David Feldman.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least that's who I think he was talking to and talking about.
Well,
some
Feldman
bullshit.
Agrees. That's a thing. Same thing with Chris Lytle too. Like, there's a lot of people that were a big part of the BKFC agree with everyone on the outside that was a really bad stoppage.
Yeah, it seems like the ref just kind of came in and changed the outcome of the fight.
Yeah,
without a good reason. Like, I've seen enough fights. I'm a former boxer. I've watched hundreds of boxing matches, countless UFC shit. I think all of us know what a fighter who's getting a standing eight count and it shouldn't be continued. We kind of know what that looks like. Yeah. There's like things you look for.
There's a compromising look, or there's
Connor Tierney had none of that shit going on.
He wasn't like walking weird. He wasn't wobbly on his legs. He literally was just breathing.
Yeah, so it wasn't like the fight was waved
off.
He
didn't have like a bad cut
of punches landing.
Like,
yeah. He got a standing eight count, and it was good to go, and the ref was like, nah. I really strongly disagreed with it. Connor's probably going to get a rematch because Feldman's in his corner on this. And we'll see what happens.
Do you think he needs a rematch, though, or do you think he just needs a new opponent and move on from it?
Maybe he'll just move up and fight. Because I don't think Lindsay's done enough to warrant a title shot. No. Shade on him, but I mean, Tierney's record is, well, now it's what, 7-2? It was 7-1, 8-1 going into this.
Yeah.
In bare knuckle. Mm-hmm. Fucking refs can really fuck shit up. Refs and judges.
Refs can fuck shit up, and then also, but you got to think, this is a tough, because we kind of talked about this a bit last time we talked about BKFC, but I think there's a rough cue at what up there with Louis Palomino's belts, and it's kind of hard for me to fit Conor Tierney in like real soon after some shit like that, because I just feel like a rematch will take time. I feel like if he moves on and fights someone who's a better or higher ranked opponent and puts on a good show, we just kind of forget what happens.
Maybe he gets they give him some crazy shit like the loser of Mendez Alvarez.
Yeah, I'll take that. Let's talk about that for a sec. So we'll put a pin in that. I feel like, you know, what happened to Conor Tierney was bullshit. Like,
yeah, that was bullshit.
Bullshit. We agree, and it is what it is.
Rest of the card entertaining as it always is.
But now let's talk a bit about what the BKFC has just done last.
Major signings from BKFC.
Huge. So we talked a bit about that card that was going to be Mike Perry and Chad Mendes and Ben Rothwell like a whole card, but there was no announced opponents. So then David Feldman comes out on Errol Hawani this week and announces that the BKFC has just signed Luke Rockhold, Eddie Alvarez. They will be the opponents for Mike Perry and fucking Chad Mendes.
Yeah, Chad Mendes versus Eddie Alvarez at 165 pounds, Conor Tierney's weight class. And Luke Rockhold versus Platinum Mike Perry at 185 pounds.
Yeah.
My mind is still blown with those signings. And then Luke Rockhold comes on the show and goes out in various media and states that he is getting paid better in BKFC than he did in the UFC. And I don't see any reason to disagree with that. In fact, I believe they were talking about that on Joe Rogan's podcast,
validated that and said that he didn't think Luke would be lying about something like that. And he said that with all these signings that the BKFC has made, that they're an actual, you know, promotion to watch out for. Because I do think that a lot of people, as much as BKFC has become a big thing, these kind of signings, we've talked about this in the past, these are what makes this company into what it needs to be. You know what I mean? Now we got literally we're talking about a former UFC champ, two former UFC champions in BKFC headlining cards in their first fights. It's just huge. It's huge. There's no other way to put it.
And these are guys that are not shot fighters. They're not over the hill. Mm-hmm. Man, that's going to be a hell of a night of fights.
Eddie Alvarez is going to be interesting to me, because Eddie Alvarez is known to get into a war, and he's like such a dog already. Like, him and Mendez is going to be a fucking great fight.
Absolutely. You know, we might as well announce this right now while we're talking about BKFC. We do have the BKFC's Inter Bantamweight Champion, Reggie Barnett, joining our show next week. So the show after this, episode 162. So be sure to tune in there as well. We're really excited to be sitting down with Reggie. We've been lucky enough to have a lot of BKFC champions and fighters on, and we're excited to have another one join the show. The other interesting thing that BKFC announced with this card is that it's also going to be a $49.99 pay-per-view. I find that very interesting, too. I don't know how that's going to work if you have the BKFC TV app and you've already been paying for it for a while. Because, like, Knuckle Mania was like $20 if you ordered it on Fight TV.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you had the BKFC app, you just got it, you know. So I'm not sure how that's going to work, but honestly, I'll pay $50 for that pay-per-view. Solid.
Yeah, it's a good pay-per-view.
I mean, I don't have any qualms with that.
And then you got Ben Rothwell still waiting on his opponent to be announced, but he's on there too. So.
Yeah, and Christine Faria versus Beck Rawlings.
Yeah, which
is defending her title on there.
Yeah,
that's solid. Solid shit, man.
Top to bottom.
Major signings. BKFC. This is that Triller money coming in. Remember,
it's got
to
be.
A couple months ago, we were talking about that BKFC had made some big moves at the end of the year, and we found out that they didn't even have that cash yet.
Yeah.
And Feldman came out and said, just wait a minute until that Triller money comes through. And now we're starting to see it right here, right now.
Yep. And we also have the heavyweight champion of BKFC calling out one Francis Ngannou.
And don't think that that's not a crazy fucking thing that might actually happen. Because BKFC is pretty flexible. They'll do a one-off.
Yeah. I do think.
I'm not saying it's likely.
Anybody who's calling out Francis Ngannou for a bare knuckle fight's got something wrong with
it. Dude, Francis Ngannou.
Francis is a dangerous man.
Belcher's face might get broken.
Yeah,
he'll wind up looking like that Johnny Cash tattoo on his arm, all bloated and fat.
That would literally be that fighting bare knuckle versus Francis Ngannou sounds like a worst case scenario in every single facet of any kind of thought I could have about fighting Francis Ngannou. Like, if you had to fight Francis bare knuckle, that is the worst way to fight Francis Ngannou.
You know a scenario where that actually could happen?
I'd fight him in MMA, boxing. I'd fight him in any other sport but bare knuckle.
Just to hear me out. Here's a scenario where that could actually happen.
Yeah.
Francis gets his big money boxing match first. He most likely loses that.
Yeah.
His next best option wouldn't necessarily be another boxing match. He might be able to take something like, I mean, they could probably offer him a $5 million, $8 million flat fee and pay-per-view points. That's the type of shit you could definitely charge 50, maybe even more for.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's bare knuckle. It's a whole different thing. We've seen boxers not necessarily have success. Francis could have great success in bare knuckle, far more than he could have in regular boxing, in my opinion. So it's not unheard of that it could be the second biggest payday for him.
Yeah.
And then he would still have a return to MMA that he could go to, which I think would be the third biggest payday.
Yeah.
It's just a scenario. It's possible. You never know. It'd be dope. I'm down with it. BKFC making moves.
Yeah, for sure. I want to say something about Francis Ngannou, but I think it's disrespectful, so I'll keep it to myself.
Oh, then you just tease everybody listening.
Well, I just feel like Francis Ngannou, if he really wanted to, could just sit back and pick off all these people who are up and coming fighters in other sports for the next few years and just bank the fuck out. Think about if he just fought in the BKFC, had some crazy one-off not even crazy one-offs, but once a year fought whatever super fight for the BKFC and got paid a huge flat fee from him. But then in his off time from the BKFC, he just went to the PFL and won their $1 million tournament every fucking year. Could just literally sit on a fucking pot of money at the end of the rainbow for sure. Because he still has probably another 4 or 5 solid years of his career left.
If he signed with Bellator, they'd let him do BKFC as well. I mean, they let Michael Venom Page go over there. He was under contract. And they've already offered him a boxing and MMA.
Yeah.
But you're right, he could do something like that as well. But who knows?
Go anywhere.
Well, before we round out the show, let's touch on next week's UFC Fight Night. We have got who in the main event?
Piotr Jan versus Merab. This is a good fight.
It's a good fight for Merab. Yeah, I mean, everybody's saying that he's going to be the guy to take over for Sterling. Everybody being Sterling's, you know, team.
Yeah.
But he's on a great win streak. I mean, he's got a win over Aldo. He's got the win over Marias. Yeah. Cody Stammen, Dodson, Lopez. Nice streak. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you look at the last four for Petr Yan, as good as he is, he's got the loss to Sterling, even though it was kind of bullshit. He's got the win over Sanhagen, but then he's got the loss to Sterling that was solid, the loss, and then the loss to O'Malley. Mm-hmm. So I say it's a good fight. I think Merab wins this personally.
I think it's kind of a career defining fight if you're Petr Yan, though. I think you have to win this fight. I think
he's in a spot.
He's in a real spot because, I mean, kind of similar to what happened to Marlon Moraes when he was champion. You know, he lost to Cejudo, and then he lost just like all these fights after to all the guys who were up and comers in the division. Like, I'd hate to see that happen to Jan also, but that's kind of where his career is trending if he loses this fight.
Yep.
You know, it's like he would then be kind of a ledger of, are you ready to fight for the title? Well, can you beat Petr Yan? You know? Which is crazy to think, because just, 18 months ago, we were all sitting back kind of thinking he was the best bantamweight in the world, and, like, you had to bring everything you had to beat this guy. It's pretty nuts.
Wow, things change pretty quickly.
Yeah. But with all that being said, I'm taking you on.
We'll see what happens. I think that about wraps the show for this week.
Yep.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thank our sponsor once again, Binoid CBD. Best deals can be found where, Paul?
So at mid.com, where you can head over there, click the gear button, and support the podcast. Then you can head over to Instagram and follow us at SWAT MMA Podcast.
Be sure to tune in next week. Reggie Barnett Jr., BKFC, interim bantamweight champ. Peace.